Yeah, welcome back to Nachigami. Today we are going to be finishing Sefer Daniel, the Book of Daniel. This is the 12th and last perek, and what a journey it has been. Sefer Daniel is one of the most under-discovered and underrated Sfarim in Tanakh. It has been a pleasure to be learning it together with you. Let us try to understand the last little section which really pulls it all together. As mentioned beforehand, we left Perek Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter, shy of the last six psukim, Mem to Mem Hei. And we're going to pick up from there, adjoining it to the very short last Perek itself. The last Perek itself is a very short Perek. It only has 13 psukim. So we're going to put these two together. The reason that's true is because many of the Mepharshim understand that the last six psukim of Perek Yud Aleph actually are a new topic altogether and belong more in theme with the 12th Perek. Let's start and appreciate. So we're going to be looking at these psukim, and here is, first of all, a quick summary of what he sees. He is now told at the end of time, as is told Uva Ace Kates, at the time of the end, the king of the south will attack the king of the north and bring chariots and many ships, and he'll sweep over the area invading the beautiful land Eretz Atzvi, which usually refers to the land of Israel. Many will die, some will escape, including Edom, Moab, and Ammon, and he'll seize lands. Even in Egypt, he will seize and take great control of great wealth, the wealth of Egypt. The Libyans, the Cushites will follow at his foot, he describes. And then he hears reports from the east and the north that alarm him, and he'll march forth in fury with his army and camp out between the beautiful mountain and the sea and the Mediterranean Sea, and he will ultimately be destroyed with no one helping him. So this is what we're being described over here. Just to appreciate what we're about to do, when we talk about the end of days, Ibn Ezra points out that the first half, the former half of Perek Yud Aleph, you could certainly understand to a degree if you study history, which is why when we looked at it yesterday, we tried to look at the historical details to be able to appreciate what the psukim were predicting. Because remember, Daniel was not living in any of these eras. We have seen history. It was future to him. But Ibn Ezra says, but any pasuk which talks about the future beyond the destruction of the base of English, beyond the realms that we can identify in history, it becomes even more cloudy. And that's the territory that we're in over here. So we're going to see a number of conjectures, a number of traditions, but it's very hard to know exactly what it'll be like. In fact, the Rambam says in Hilchos Melachim, in Perek Yud Beis, the very last chapter of all the Rambam's 14 volumes of Mishneh Torah, where he says, "V'kol eila dvorim ga kayotzehem, all these matters, loy b'ayin lo yeda ha'adam eich shiyihiyu ad shiyihiyu." We're not going to know how they are until they are. Shez dvorim stumim hem etzal nevim, that even the prophets didn't understand them, as we'll see again, Daniel saying that in our Perek today. And therefore he says, even the Chachamim don't ein lahem kabbalah b'dvorim elu. Even the sages don't have a clear, incandescent tradition as to understand this, rather just trying to understand how to balance and synthesize the many contradictory psukim on this matter. And therefore he says a person should not spend too much time trying to ponder this. Rather, a person in Mitzvah Shem, he should not also work out the end of times. Rather, he should believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it will come about and will try to appreciate this. One thing is just to understand, when is this supposed to be happening? Or around when is this description of the Ketzer Yamim and the North King, the South King, the whole business? So many of the classic Mepharshim say this is a continuation of Perek Yud Aleph, as Greece and Rome and the King of the North and the King of the South, the Seleucus and the Seleucid Empire and the Ptolemy Empire and the Romans and so on. And the reason that's true is because as the Da'at Mikra points out, it could have been that the war of the Hashmonaim against Antiochus IV, Epiphanes, would have been actually the war of Gog and Magog, the apocalyptic war at the end of time. But it didn't. And therefore, that's why later Mepharshim tried to find relevance in times of their age and the future. So for instance, the Malbim and Abarbanel talks about the king of the north being Christianity and the king of the south being Islam, and both converging on Yerushalayim. And the Malbim very clearly and candidly connecting this to Yechezkel, Perek Lamed, Chesed Lamed, Tes, talking about the apocalyptic war of Gog and Magog around Jerusalem, the terrible, terrible terror that it creates. Christianity taking the land of Israel, then the fight back of Islam against them. Again, we've seen that model a few times in history. We've seen the crusading model. This seems to be on a more mega scale. Just to appreciate this as well, the Abarbanel lived through the Spanish Inquisition and expulsion, And at that point in time, towards year 1500, which was when they were moving, there was a significant belief in Catholic Spain in the Iberian Peninsula that they would be able to cleanse the Iberian Peninsula of all non-believers, Jews and Moors alike. They'd finished conquering the Moors in the south and expelling the Jews from the borders of Spain. And the next moment was the assumption would be that Christianity would reclaim the Middle East, would reclaim Jerusalem. There was a movement, which is what the Abarbanel is talking about over here, moving towards the year 1500. Who's the king that's talked about over here? Rashi points out, or many of the Farshim point out, there's a vagueness as to who the kings are, which leaves it open to be numerous kings in history, depending on how and what it's referring to. Let's move into Perek Yud Beis itself. The first three psukim talk about the resurrection of the dead. The general perspective over here is it talks about how at this moment in time, this terrible moment in history, Michael, the great minister, will stand up and fight for your people. Remember, your is referring to Daniel, because the angel speaking is Gabriel. So he's talking to Abanei Amecha, your people. It'll be a terrible time. He talks about the calamity and the distress that has never, ever been seen for the nation of Israel since its inception as a people, which will be occurring at this time. No one will escape, and only those who are written in the book. It describes many of the sleepers will rise from the dust. This is a famous statement. So those who will enter the world to come, the eternal world, and those who will be entered into the world of destruction, of everlasting abhorrence. And those who understand will shine like the sky, and those who look after the community will be like eternal stars. A few questions quickly over here. Why is Michael arriving? So the Malbim points out that all the natural and supernatural laws will be crying out for the destruction of the people of Israel. And at such time, it will require Michael, who is the ultimate angel, the ultimate force above all forces, who will have to take charge and defend Israel against all the corruption, against all the slates against them. And that's what it's referring to. It seems to be that this is referring to at the end of days, when this is actually occurring. The Matsuris points out that we're talking about terrible, terrible oppression. He attributes it to in the hands of Yishmael, of the Arabs. At this time, of course, he's speaking from the perspective where the understanding that he would have, which is certainly a possibility, as we talked about that, about Malbim and Abarbanel. What is this resurrection about? What is this resurrection of the dead? So Rav Yehoshua, who's quoted in the Ibn Ezra, says it's a metaphor of Israel coming out of their near-death state of exile. However, Rav Sadia Gaon says, no, it refers to real-deal resurrection of the dead. We're talking about dead people getting out of the grave. We're talking about a supernatural experience, one of the only times in Tanakh that it ever explicitly refers to this idea. The Malbim quotes the Ma'ari, says that, and explaining that at the end of time, this will be the time where justice will be meted out. There are many people who died unjustly. There are many people who lived their entire life out and never got their due ends. And there are many people who sinned and did terrible things. This will be the time for recompense. It will be the time for justice. Who will be resurrected? It happens to be a matter of dispute. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos, the Rav Sadia Gaon he quoted here, says only the tzaddikim. Although it says Rabim Mishene Ofer, many of, that means to say it's a minority of humanity, but many of the sleepers of dust will be brought back, but it's referring to the tzaddikim alone. The Abarbanel says no, it has to be everyone, because the what about the people who hoped for Mashiach and then never came, and they might not be tzaddikim and gemurim? They need to also be brought back, and those who are terrible and need to see the justice that they were incorrect and wrong, they also need to be brought back. So he says everybody will be brought back. The Chastai Kreskes is kind of a little bit of a middle road where he says both the tzaddikim and the Rishayim will come back to see a certain degree of justice. Will the body be resurrected? An interesting debate. The Rambam in Hilchos Teshuva is of the perspective that everything is absolutely spiritual. And the world to come will be absolutely spiritual. There will be no need for a physical hampering body. Whereas the Ramban in Shara Gemul, which seems to be the predominant view, is of the opinion that the body will in fact return and be reunited, which seems to be what's been described in the Pesukim here. Reason being is the composite human being is both physical and spiritual. It's just that both ends need to be cleaned. Both ends need to be fixed, which is why the soul goes through its process of cleansing after death, and the body goes through its process of cleansing and biodegradation after death. Once those processes have been finished and the end of time comes, they'll be reunited in a pure way for receiving their reward. The way the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Tzadi Aleph to Amud Beis describes this is it describes about a blind and a lame man together, two men who unite to create mischief. The blind man can't see and the lame man cannot walk, so the lame man goes on the shoulders of the blind man and they go and create havoc. When they're brought to court, the blind man says, I couldn't have possibly done this because I cannot see. The lame man says, I cannot possibly have done this because I cannot walk. And so they said, you know what, you're both right. So instead what they do is they mount the blind man on top of the lame man on top of the shoulders of the blind man, and they punish them and beat them together. And that's what's happening over here, is that the body and the soul are going to be reunited, because alone they would not be able to be worthy of this or able to do this. Looking at Psukim Dalet to Ches in Perek Yud Beis, we're now told that Daniel is told to write all these things down to spread the knowledge about this. He sees at this point two men, two specters standing by the river, and the man of linen, the Isha Badim, which we know to be referring to Gabriel, is floating above the river, and he is asked, Daniel asks him, when is the end of wonders? And the man lifts his hands to the heavens and swears. He says, for time, times, and half a time, when the breaking of the power of the holy people comes to an end, that shall be all, when this is all fulfilled. To which Daniel answers, that's too difficult. What does that mean? So if we don't understand it, that's clear, because Daniel also does not understand it. Who are these other men? The Rabbi Malbim says Shadim. The Mitzvah says two other angels. Ibn Yechia says it's referring to the psychological aspects of intellect and imagination. And the Rabbi Nelson says it refers to Christianity and Islam. Two other specters is obviously a broad range of perspectives there. Our last psukim in the Perek are our epilogue, which are psukim test to Yud Gimel, in which now this angel Gabriel tells Daniel, and he says, these are very hard things to understand, the Kates. He says, many will be smelted, many will be cleansed, the evildoers will be made evil, but many of them won't understand. And he describes from the days of the Bittul of the Tamid, of the stopping of the sacrifice, the Tamid will be 1290 years, and praise will be a person who can live until the year 1335 to wait for it. And he closes with the words, Va'ata, and you now, Daniel, lech leketz, go to the end, v'sanuach, you will rest, v'samoed, and you will be resurrected or arise, l'gorol chol leketz yamim, to your role at the end of days. So a few things just over here to notice is that in describing this over here in these psukim, psal posuk yud, and Yud Aleph are actually describing how it is that people try to find the end. They'll look into books like Daniel, and they'll be refined. They think they've got the clarity. There'll be many who will be evil and find their evil preconceived notions in this. Noteworthy, Christianity. Christianity looked into the book of Daniel, and in its vagueness and its gray territory, they were able to extract exactly what they wanted to about the rise of Christianity as being the ultimate redemption. So there's a lot that's going to be taken out of this, and the book of Daniel already acknowledges this going forward. What do we make of these time frames? We hear three different time frames, time, and half a time, which we already saw mentioned in Perek Zion. We discussed that a little bit. We also hear the years 1219, the years 1335. We discussed this also earlier. That there are these, perhaps whether this is measured from the Bittul HaTamid or from the time that the prophecy is received by Daniel, different years, the way the Malbim looks at it, around the year 1889 or the year in the 1200s, the way Rashi predicts it. But it is notable that there's a 45-year gap between these two predictions, 1290 and 1335 years, and Rashi explains that there's going to be the Mashiach comes, disappears, and comes again. Just interesting perspective in understanding this. And there was a lot of description about this. One thing which is worth noting is that Ibn Ezra does not understand this to be a 1290-year period. He understands it to be a 1290-day period, which is essentially 3.5 years, referring to the amount of time that the Talmud was not in operation. And the most powerful part of this entire thing is understanding that we do not understand this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being good enough to give Daniel these perspectives, but we will understand them in retrospect more than necessarily looking forward. But the most important point is the part that is given, the promise that is given to Daniel at the end, which is Ata, you lech leketz leketz v'samoel v'samoel al garochol leketz yamin, knowing and believing that there is a case, knowing and believing that there is resurrection, and that we should all be able to see that, knowing the truth, even if we can't necessarily understand when and exactly how. With this, we close the book of Daniel. Yashar Kachem. This is an incredibly difficult, but also rewarding sefer. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.